Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, July 22, 2016. An appointed Member of Parliament for the SPLM-IO says efforts by some of his colleagues to replace First Vice President will not work.
In the event of the absence of the chairman, he's supposed to delegate somebody who should talk on his behalf. The chairman has not delegated Taban Dengai to speak on behalf of the movement. Taban Dengai is a member of the political bureau, and he's never attended any political bureau since the formation of TIGON.
And it's official. Donald Trump is the U.S. Republican presidential candidate that will take on Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton in U.S. election.
We will make America strong again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And we will make America great again.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. An appointed member of parliament representing the SPLM-IO in the National Legislative Assembly says the move by some of Riek Machar's group to nominate Taban Dengai as the acting first vice president is not in accordance with the party rules and guidelines. Manasseh Zindo says Mr. Machar did not delegate any senior party member to negotiate with President Salva Kiir on the current political crisis in South Sudan. Zindo says Machar is still the leader of the SPLM-IO and the country's first vice president, despite his absence in Juba. Zindo dismisses efforts by some of SPLM-IO members in Juba who are proposing SPLM-IO former chief negotiator Taban Dengai to be appointed as the country's first acting vice president.
First of all, let me make some clarification. We no longer have the chief negotiator. Comrade Taban Dengai had resigned as the chief negotiator. That position is vacant. On the issue of the chairman and the first vice president, he is outside Juba for security reasons. You know, following the event that took place at J1, which is the presidential palace, the following day, the government sent a helicopter gunship, which destroyed his house, and also attacked our two sites in Juba. So that is why Dr. Riek Machar is not in Juba.
But other senior SPLM-IO are in Juba, like Alfred Ladugore, who is the deputy of Riek Machar. He is in Juba. Taban Dengai is there, and other ministers are there. If it's a question of security, why are your other ministers still in Juba?
Some of the ministers who are still in Juba are there, and their security is not really guaranteed. Most of ministers have taken refuge at UNMISS, and others have left Juba.
I've watched clips of Taban Dengai and Ezekiel Lol meeting President Kiir, and Taban Dengai came and made a statement that the implementation of the peace agreement will continue with or without Riek Machar. And there are talks that Taban is engaging the government seriously to implement the peace agreement. What does your party rules say on this kind of engagement?
It is very unfortunate that the two colleagues you've mentioned claim to be talking on behalf of the leadership of the SPLM-IO. We have the chairman of the SPLM-IO. We have the deputy chairperson. We have the Secretary General. In the event of the absence of the chairman, he's supposed to delegate somebody. He's supposed to delegate somebody who should talk on his behalf. The chairman has not delegated Taban Dengai to speak on behalf of the movement. Taban Dengai is a member of the political bureau, and he's never attended any political bureau since the formation of TIGON. So I can say that they are not talking on behalf of the SPLM-IO.
But he told reporters that they don't know where Dr. Riek Machar is and they cannot wait with the implementation of the peace agreement because they are saying that it's crucial at this point that the peace agreement has to be implemented. What is your comment on that?
It is not true because Dr. Riek Machar is speaking to those of us who are here in Nairobi. He is speaking to the spokesman, Comrade James Gadet. And if the chairman was not talking to anybody, then it is the political bureau, which is the highest organ of the party, that should have met and made a decision. At the moment, majority of the members of the political bureau are outside. We issued a statement this afternoon. I don't know whether you've received it. And also members of the National Liberation Council are in UNIMIS and outside Juba. So the two gentlemen cannot claim to be talking on behalf of the party, because it is the political bureau, in the absence of the chairman, it is the political bureau, which is the highest organ of the party, that should have delegated them to speak on behalf of the leadership.
What is your reaction to some people who will say your party is in disarray? Some people are in UNIMIS camp, others have fled the country, and others are inside in Juba. And so in a situation like that, Taban Dengai is trying to show leadership here.
It is not true that the party is in disarray. The government in Juba, following the events that happened at the presidential palace, targeting our people, arresting some of them. So what is happening is the majority of the leadership have taken refuge at the UNIMIS. If somebody was to show leadership, it is General Alfred Radugore, who is the deputy chairman of the SPLM-IO, who should be speaking on behalf of the SPLM-IO, not Taban Dengai.
People are asking, since you are speaking to your chairman, Dr. Riek Machar, what is he telling you? When is he coming to Juba?
Dr. Riek Machar is willing to come to Juba, but if security must be assured first. We now call on the international community, on the IGAD, on the regional powers, to send a third force to Juba, which will act as a buffer zone between the two armies, and assure Dr. Riek Machar of his safety.
Where is Dr. Riek?
He's just outside Juba.
Outside Juba, where? Where exactly?
I can assure you that he's outside Juba, where it can only take him a few minutes to make it to Juba.
That's Manasseh Zindo, SPLM-IO appointed member of parliament in South Sudan's Legislative Assembly. He was speaking to me from Nairobi yesterday. Meanwhile, the SPLM-IO spokesman in Juba says the party is prepared to move forward without its leader, Riek Machar. William Ezekiel says Mr. Machar, who remains the country's first vice president, has not reported to his office since July 8th. Ezekiel says the implementation of the August peace agreement should not be delayed because of Machar's unexplained absence from the office. He says the people of South Sudan look to President Salva Kiir and first Vice President Riek Machar to bring an end to the political crisis in South Sudan.
The first Vice President and the chairman, he is not around. He is not in Juba. He has been absent for almost 10 days now without assuming or discharging his duties as first Vice President. On our side, we believe that there is need to stick to the peace agreement. There is need to implement the provisions of the peace agreement from Chapter 1 to Chapter 8. We believe that such a process will at least help in diffusing the situation now, the current situation in South Sudan. We believe that we are part and parcel of this peace agreement, and we are also a stakeholder to this peace agreement. And the peace agreement is the only way forward for us in South Sudan to have a way forward to resolve the issues facing the people of South Sudan at this particular moment. No way except to implement the peace agreement.
Now, what is the plan moving forward? You have mentioned that Riek Machar is not in Juba and it has made it difficult for your party to move on. But could you just give us an idea of what the political game plan is moving forward with the absence of the first vice president?
Of course, on our side here, the remaining behind who have been left by first vice president when he decided to abandon his residence in Jebel. On our side, we are now talking to each other. We are now trying to come up with a very clear vision in regard on how we can go about with the implementation of the peace agreement. Tomorrow, we are going to have a meeting here in Juba to at least discuss this issue of how we can go with this issue of the peace agreement. We believe that with our firm belief and commitment to implement the remaining provisions of the peace agreement, we can move forward with the people of South Sudan to achieve their security, their stability, their development and prosperity.
Now, some observers have said that Taban Dengai is positioning himself to become the first vice president. What is your reaction to that?
Really, I'm surprised why people are really trying to disseminate this false information. It is we in the SPLM in opposition, particularly in the National Liberation Council and in the Political Bureau, who met in Pagak in December 2015 and appointed and elected Dr. Riek Machar to assume to be our only candidate to fill the post of the first vice president. So Taban himself is not nominating himself alone. It is the same people who sat and elect the first vice president, Dr. Riek Machar, will be the same guys who will also try to see to it that as long as the post is vacant, as long as Dr. Machar is not showing up, and as long as we don't know his whereabouts, then at least also we'll sit, at least to rescue and arrest the situation now. There is need for us to sit. Could be Taban Deng, could be anybody else. Our candidate should be a guy who had been following this process of the peace agreement since the beginning from A to Z. We don't want to talk about names, but still we believe that Taban is a strong and capable candidate to assume that position.
Now, Ladugor is the most senior leader of the SPLM-IO with the absence of Dr. Machar. Should he not be the one who should assume the responsibilities of the first vice president since he is the most senior leader?
Yeah, exactly. You are right because of his seniority. But don't forget a very important issue here. Who is really capable to address the needs and aspirations of the people of South Sudan at this particular time? Even the agreement itself is not talking about the seniority of a member. It's talking about SPLM-IO members to sit and appoint or nominate their candidate. We are not opposed to Ladugore to assume the duties of our first vice president. But at least also we need to see to it that the candidate who is supposed to come up must also have some potentialities in regard to the peace agreement, how was it conducted, the way it was going, and so on and so forth.
Are you aware of the implications that the decision to remove Dr. Machar put someone else in his position? Talk to me about some of the implications and some of the fears that you might have in moving forward with this decision.
The agreement is not about individual persons. It is about its spirit and the letter. It's about the message. That is why we always say and still also retrieve that we are for the smooth implementation of the remaining provisions of the agreement. There are still issues that are posing a great challenge to us. That is why we said with the agreement we can move forward. With the implementation of the agreement we can realize the aspiration of the people of South Sudan. We are not after individual persons. We are after implementation of the provisions of the agreement.
That's William Ezekiel, SPLM-IO spokesman, speaking from Juba to South Sudan in Focus, Washington reporter Ayen Bior earlier today. U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump formally accepted his party's presidential nomination on the fourth and final day of the National Republican Convention. In his speech last night, Trump promised to bring sweeping political change, create wealth, and make America safe again. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on Trump's big night from the Midwest city of Cleveland, Ohio.
It was Donald Trump's biggest political moment in the spotlight so far, and Trump was eager to seize it.
Together, we will lead our party back to the White House, and we will lead our country back to safety, prosperity, and peace. We will be a country of generosity and warmth. But we will also be a country of law and order.
With his family looking on and thousands of excited Republicans in the convention hall, Trump sought to foster party unity after a sometimes fractious convention. And he also went after his Democratic opponent, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
After 15 years of wars in the Middle East, after trillions of dollars spent and thousands of lives lost, the situation is worse than it has ever been before. This is the legacy of Hillary Clinton. Death, destruction, terrorism, and weakness.
At one point, Trump was interrupted by a demonstrator.
How great are our police, and how great is Cleveland?
And later, he vowed to get tough on crime.
In this race for the White House, I am the law and order candidate.
Trump was introduced by his daughter, Ivanka, who spoke about her father's softer side.
My father not only has the strength and ability necessary to be our next president, but also the kindness and compassion that will enable him to be the leader that this country needs.
Trump repeated his vow to build a border wall with Mexico, negotiate tougher trade deals, and defeat the Islamic State group. And he closed his remarks with a now familiar campaign promise.
To all Americans tonight, in all of our cities, and in all of our towns, I make this promise. We will make America strong again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And we will make America great again.
Hey, hey, ho, ho. Outside the convention hall, protests continued for a fourth day, but were contained by a large police presence. The political focus now shifts to Hillary Clinton and the Democrats, who hold their convention next week in Philadelphia. Clinton supporters issued a new ad featuring past comments from Trump praising Clinton.
Hillary Clinton, I think, is a terrific woman. She really works hard, and I think she does a good job.
With the Republican convention in Cleveland now history, Donald Trump hopes to write at least one more chapter in his political story come November. Jim Malone, VOA News, at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, IDPs in Wau are in desperate need of humanitarian assistance. We'll have that story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how often do you dance?
Oh, daily. I dance daily. I exercise daily. I made it a habit these days. I have now 2 weeks I'm going on a roll. I wake up in the morning, I exercise, I dance, I put music in my own house. Then I go to work.
And even when we are singing praising songs, I also enjoy dancing. And at times when I'm bored alone, when I don't have people, I try to dance. Yeah. No, not daily, but once in a while, more special on Sundays.
And not often, once in a blue moon. I don't really like it, so once in a blue moon, I just dance.
I think twice a week when I play music or instruments, and then on Sundays when I go to church and then there's praise and worship, yes, I dance.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's central bank is releasing $7 million to import food from neighboring countries. Juba Town is experiencing major food shortages after the recent fighting between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and first Vice President Riek Machar. Tito Justin has the story for VOA from the capital, Juba.
For more than a week now, no food has arrived in Juba from neighboring Uganda or Kenya, largely because of rampant insecurity along the Juba-Nimle Road, the main lifeline of South Sudan's goods supply. Markets in Juba have run out of food and most families are facing a looming food crisis. South Sudan Chamber of Commerce and officials from the Ministry of Agriculture announced today at a press conference that 10 truckloads of food are on their way to Juba from Uganda after the central bank allocated millions of dollars to buy the imported food. Simon Akwedeng, Secretary General of the South Sudan Chamber of Commerce, says his office met yesterday with the central bank officials to make sure that funds were released.
We had a meeting to see a way we can be able to get money quickly to bring food to Juba. Auction was done, amounting to about $14 million, and the Bank of South Sudan pledged to release half of that money for food import of food from neighboring countries, which is about $7 million.
Prices of food and other items have shot up since the deadly classes begin in Juba on July 8th. Despite the relative calm in Juba this week, Akwei says traders are still unable to import food from neighboring countries because they don't have the foreign currency to buy food. One U.S. dollar sold for 40.5 South Sudanese pounds before the classes erupted. Today, a dollar sells at more than 60 South Sudanese pounds on the black market. Akwei is appealing to the South Sudan Army to deploy forces along the Juba-Nimle route to protect trucks and drivers delivering food to Juba.
It is necessary to give escort from Numuli and to Numuli as well to secure the safety of drivers on the way. Security of stores and markets in Juba is also paramount to boost confidence of traders who are currently scared of fighting like looting and safety of premises.
He also urges the government and humanitarian aid workers to find a way to transport internally displaced persons sheltering in UN protection of civilian camps to their respective homes so they can produce their own food for their families. The South Sudan Chamber of Commerce condemned the looting of shops allegedly by government forces, especially in Juba's Jebel Market. Looting also took place in markets at Gudele and Munki residential areas during the fighting in Juba. Akwei says the continued looting of markets and shops in Juba has tarnished the country's image and negatively affected South Sudan's business environment. Akwei is urging government officials to quickly allocate hard currency to traders so they can import essential commodities into South Sudan.
We are kindly asking the government to form a committee to assess the losses incurred by the people during the senseless conflict, looting of markets like Jebel Souk, among other markets and business premises like train hotels in Jebel, where everything was lost, amounting to millions of US dollars.
Last week, traders in Juba asked the government to intervene after seeing members of South Sudan Army looted their shops. Akwei is also urging shop owners who still have food stocks to reopen their shops and sell to residents who he says are at risk of starving unless food supplies arrive quickly. The 10 truckloads of food are expected to arrive in Juba on Friday evening. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
The International Organization for Migration says thousands of people continue to be displaced in Wau after fighting late last month triggered large-scale humanitarian needs in the state. IOM says the security situation in Wau town has blocked aid workers from helping people in need. Ian Bior has more from Washington.
The influx of newly arrived IDPs in Wau has stabilized, but security concerns have not. That's according to the International Organization for Migration. The IOM says it is trying to assist more than 83,000 displaced people who are too afraid to go back home due to ongoing insecurity. Ashley McLaughlin, an IOM spokesperson in Nairobi, says her team in Wau is having a hard time reaching vulnerable South Sudanese.
But the area is largely south of Wau town that we can't get to. Insecurity, difficulty accessing sites. There's lots of armed actors in the area that are preventing us from getting there. And of course, this is a major concern when it comes to humanitarian needs because the longer they go unaddressed, the worse they're going to get.
McLaughlin says Wau's economy is deteriorating along with the humanitarian conditions. She says access to markets is difficult, which has caused food insecurity in the town. McLaughlin says the security situation in Wau remains tense, due in part to the ongoing presence of armed elements in the area.
We do know that there's enough threats in the area. There's many different armed groups, you know, whether they be government, whether they be opposition, whether they be groups that are somewhat aligned to both, that are making it really hard to access these areas.
IOM says there are at least 83,000 people displaced by the ongoing fighting in Wau, and many of them need immediate assistance.
So this means that at least 38,000 people, according to our estimates, are displaced in need of assistance but are unable to access it. We run a clinic in a town called Nagisa, which is south. We haven't been able to get there for a week. We've been trying to rehabilitate boreholes in these areas to ensure that people have access to safe drinking water. We haven't been able to do so.
Aid agencies are working to address the problems in Wau by providing water, food, and other basic necessities. But McLaughlin says what civilians really want is a restoration of peace in their community.
And largely what we've heard from people is that they still feel that their neighborhoods within Wau town are insecure In order for them to make a decision to return home, they would need a lot more information on the security situation in the area.
South Sudan's Minister of Health, Riek Guy, was in Wau recently and is expected to present recommendations to President Salva Kiir on how the government can address the humanitarian concerns in the region. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
From Washington, we move overseas. The International Organization for Migration reports nearly 3,000 refugees and migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea to Europe have died so far this year. Most of these deaths have occurred along the dangerous route from North Africa to Italy. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
This is the earliest that reported deaths on the Mediterranean have reached 3,000 since the migration crisis hit Europe 4 years ago. In 2014, reported fatalities reached the 3,000-person mark in September. Last year, it was in October. IOM spokesman Joel Millman says having such a large number of migrants perish before the end of July this year is alarming.
It's also very important to note that we are approaching the 250,000 arrival mark. Last year, we didn't hit 3,000 until almost a million people had come. So to have 3,000 with a quarter of that number is an indicator of just how lethal this passage has been.
Millman says refugees and migrant flows from Turkey to Greece have almost disappeared. So he notes most of the sea traffic and fatalities are now occurring among sub-Saharan Africans, making the perilous journey from North Africa to Italy. He tells VOA about 20 migrants are dying every day in the Mediterranean Sea. He says IOM staff is talking to the Libyan Coast Guard about the dangers facing people who board smugglers' boats.
The Coast Guard has had some luck turning back voyages from Libya. We've heard in the last 6 weeks a number of cases where they've been able to turn boats back. They're also recovering bodies at an alarming rate as well. So we have mixed feelings about calling that a success.
IOM runs an assisted voluntary return and reintegration program for migrants in Libya. Millman says the agency has succeeded in repatriating thousands of stranded migrants to their homes in sub-Saharan Africa. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Sura Yako by Sauti Soul. Been listening to Sauti Soul with the song Sura Yako Muzuri. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We hope you enjoyed the weekend, and we hope to see you back here again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.